You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Good morning. For those of you who do not know me, I'm John Thornton, the chairman of the Board of Trustees of the Brookings Institution. Nothing makes me happier, having spent the last 10 years of my life on U.S.-China relations, than to see a room like this with Americans and Chinese together helping to solve a difficult problem in both countries. So I welcome you very warmly to the institution this morning. I have a few opening remarks, then I'm going to turn it over to our distinguished guests. Now, there are so many important people in the audience, I'm reluctant to recognize any of them, but I do want to recognize former Prime Minister Julia Gillard and welcome you. It's nice to be in a room where the most important people in the room are all women. Science has left little doubt that what happens in the earliest years of a child's life matters immensely in shaping the rest of that life. Early childhood development, or ECD, also has disproportionate influence on the potential of our communities and indeed our countries. ECD is high on the priority list for both the U.S. and China. As such, there should be a great deal of mutual learning that can take place. At Brookings, for instance, we have begun a program that aims to fill the gaps in knowledge about what it takes to scale up ECD in developing countries. We are eager to learn from China's experience and expertise for insights that can be applied in the United States and elsewhere. To help us address this literally life-changing subject, we have with us today two of China and America's most distinguished leaders. I've had the pleasure of knowing and working with Vice Premier Liu Yongdong for a number of years. The Vice Premier has taken an interest in early childhood development issues throughout her career. As chairperson of the All-China Youth Federation in the late 1980s, for instance, she established Project Hope, a charity that has constructed tens of thousands of elementary schools in China's poorest regions. As Vice Premier and a member of the Politburo of the 18th Central Committee of the Communist Party of China, Madam Liu honors us today by being the most senior Chinese official to ever speak at Brookings. Secretary Clinton, one of the world's most eminent leaders, requires no introduction to this or any audience. Since leaving government, she has been deeply involved in the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, which keeps her engaged in global and domestic issues. As we began planning today's event, it was obvious that Secretary Clinton was the ideal and natural person to represent the U.S. side, given her longstanding involvement with China and with children's issues. Another reason is her relationship with Vice Premier Liu. They've done much important work together. As many of you will know, in 2010, Secretary Clinton and Vice Premier Liu founded the Chinese-U.S. High-Level Consultation on People-to-People Exchanges. They co-chaired three rounds of the consultations in Beijing and Washington, launching cooperative programs in education, science and technology, culture, and sports. Indeed, the official part of Vice Premier Liu's visit to Washington this time is, in fact, to continue this important initiative with her new counterpart, Secretary Kerry. Finally, a word about our co-hosts. The China Development Research Foundation is one of China's most important and influential research institutions, and we were delighted when its Secretary General, Professor Lu Mai, sitting right over here, suggested a joint event. We share a strong belief that there needs to be more exchange of views and genuine research collaboration between U.S. and Chinese think tanks. Brookings is committed to doing its part. In addition to this public event this morning, we will hold discussions between Brookings scholars and the CDRF delegation this afternoon about future areas for cooperation. Now, just a few logistical comments. In a minute, I'm going to turn the podium over to Vice Premier Liu, who will make some remarks, followed by Secretary Clinton. I will then take the prerogative of the chair, ask each one of them one question on behalf of all of us. If the audience could then remain seated while we allow the Vice Premier and the Secretary to depart, well, then there will be a break of 10 minutes, and then we'll continue the program. Please welcome Vice Premier Liu Yongdong.
Dear Madam Hillary Clinton, dear Mr. John Thornton, I first of all want to thank Mr. John Thornton for your remarks. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. It is a great pleasure for me to attend the China-U.S. Dialogue on Early Childhood Development Strategy here at the prestigious Brookings Institution. As a top global think tank with a history of close to 100 years, Brookings produces not only ideas but also visionary leaders. It is known as a university without students, and many important members of successive U.S. administrations are from Brookings. Today, Brookings is co-hosting with the China Development Research Foundation a dialogue on early childhood development, a caring and visionary event. I wish to congratulate you on the opening of the dialogue and wish it a productive one. Children are at the heart of family happiness and represent the future of a nation. When Madam Clinton visited China 3 years ago as Secretary of State, she gave me a book entitled It Takes a Village. The book addresses the need to mobilize everyone in our global village to enable all children to lead a healthy, happy, and lively life. Madam Clinton is also a passionate advocate and promoter of the 1,000 Days Initiative to improve nutrition for children. Being a mother too, I fully share her sentiments. China is a developing country whose per capita GDP ranks the 86th place in the world, and there are still 128 million Chinese who live under the UN poverty line. 5 years ago, I visited some mountainous areas in Guizhou and Ningxia provinces in western China. It was sad to see that some children could not have meals on time because schools were too far away from home and some others were thin and feeble due to malnutrition. Returning from the visit, I immediately conducted an investigation into the issue with my colleagues. In response, the Chinese government introduced a nutrition improvement program in 680 counties in contiguous poor areas that benefits over 31 million students. Such a large-scale nutrition improvement program was unprecedented in China and is highly spoken of by officials from the World Bank, the UN Food Program, and the Children's Partnership. In addition, we have implemented a nutrition improvement program for children in impoverished areas and a campaign for elimination of infant anemia, which covers 800,000 infants in 100 very poor counties and 71 nationally designated poor counties. China will soon release a national plan for the development of children in poor areas, which contains policies of whole course intervention and all-round protection. This will give more care and love to children living in poverty-stricken areas. Our goal is to build a safety net of minimum support to ensure the healthy growth of every child in China. Ladies and gentlemen, the Chinese government places high importance on the development of children and spares no effort to improve conditions for children and teenagers' education and growth. In recent years, China has pursued the policy of putting children first and adopted and implemented programs for development of women and children to be completed by 2020, along with economic and social progress. Thanks to these efforts, notable progress has been made in children's development. Steady improvement has been made in children's health. We have strengthened maternal and children's health service networks at the community level, introduced free pre-pregnancy checkup, reduced mortality rate of pregnant and postnatal women and newborns, and achieved basic coverage of the National Plan of Immunization for Children in both urban and rural areas. And China has met related UN Millennium Development goals ahead of schedule, with infant and under 5 mortality rate dropping to 10.3 per thousand and 13.2 per thousand from 32.2 per thousand and 39.7% 10 years ago. More equitable educational opportunities for children. Thanks to the implementation of the three-year action plan for preschool education, gross enrollment ratio increased from 50.9% in 2009 to 64.5% in 2012. Nine-year free compulsory education now covers both urban and rural areas, with net enrollment rate exceeding 99%. And in urban areas, nearly 14 million children of migrant workers have access to compulsory education. In rural areas, over 8,000 boarding schools have been built, and the education monitoring network for children left behind by migrant workers has been improved. Education aid policy has ensured equal right to education for nearly 400,000 children with disabilities. Stronger legal protection for children. China has established a full-fledged system of laws based on the law on the protection of minors and consisting of supporting laws such as the compulsory education law and the law on maternal and infant health care. Public awareness of legal protection of children has been greatly enhanced, and judicial institution and legal assistance networks have been strengthened. Better environment for children's growth. We have put in place a three-tiered education network consisting of schools, families, and society, and improved systems of ensuring children's safety, rearing, education, healthcare, recuperation, and housing of orphans are now covered by government budget, and more care and assistance are given to physically and mentally challenged children, homeless children, HIV-AIDS-affected children, and other vulnerable children.
Ladies and gentlemen, the third plenum of the 18th Central Committee of the Communist Party of China was concluded just 8 years ago. At the meeting, a roadmap was drawn up to deepen comprehensive reform in China in the next several years, which demonstrates to the whole world our resolve to deepen reform, expand opening up, and pursue development, peaceful development. In particular, the plenum calls for making greater efforts to ensure and improve people's well-being and promote social equity and justice. It stresses the need to advance reform and development of preschool education and special education, and to provide adequate education to every student. I believe all this will create a better social environment for the development of children. There are almost 300 reform measures which covers 15 aspects and 60 areas in the decision adopted at the plenum, which puts the protection of children an important part. And this has made it a mandatory target that we need to achieve by 2020. There are in China close to 310 million children. And young people below the age of 18, to further promote children's development in a big developing country like China is a daunting challenge. In the course of promoting children's development, one thing we have learned is that investment in early childhood development is a human capital investment with the highest return. So the earlier and more such investment is made, the better. We should give priority to meeting children's needs in making laws and policies and allocating public resources. Physical education and health are two main areas of advancing children's development. Therefore, we should pursue a policy of children's development with such a focus and lay a solid foundation for the lifelong development of everyone. The growth of children is governed by its own laws. We must carefully study these laws, respect them, respect the children, and help them develop in an all-round and distinctive way. At the same time, the whole society should care about the growth of children. We must give full play to the roles of the government, schools, communities, the media, and non-profit organizations, so that care for the children will become an integral part of national consciousness, civic code of conduct, and social morale. As an old Chinese saying goes, education in the early stage is vital to one's advancement in the whole life. Children's development will continue to be a strategic priority for the Chinese government. We will draw on best practices of other countries and explore a path of promoting children's development in keeping with China's national conditions so as to prevent poverty from being passed on to the next generation and gain rich human resources and human capital for the future. We will strive to uphold children's rights, increase their well-being, and promote their all-round development, so that each and every child will have the opportunity to realize his or her dream and enjoy an even brighter future. Ladies and gentlemen, I am visiting the United States to implement the important agreement reached by our two presidents and co-chair the first high-level consultation on people-to-people exchange following the change of government in both countries. And this mechanism was established according to the agreements of our two countries and built with the personal efforts of Madam Clinton and I. Since the launch of this mechanism 4 years ago, our two countries have actively promoted extensive and substantive exchanges in areas such as education, science and technology, culture, sports, women and young people. This has opened a new chapter in promoting mutual understanding and exchanges between the two peoples, and it has become a good example of people-to-people exchanges between China and other countries. Here, I wish to once again pay respect to Madam Clinton, the co-founder of this mechanism. To raise public awareness of child protection and create an enabling environment for their growth has increasingly become a consensus of the international community. Chinese President Xi Jinping attaches great importance to early childhood development. He has pointed out that the development potential of mankind rests on the children, and their healthy growth hinges on the care and efforts of all governments and the whole international community. In the State of the Union this year, President Obama also called for providing high-quality preschool education to every child in the United States. Despite different national conditions, China and the United States share the vision and goal of giving priority to children and promoting social fairness, and there is broad space for boosting our cooperation in this field. By making early childhood education an important part of our people-to-people exchange and enhancing our communication and dialogue in this area, we will not only bring benefit to Chinese and American children, but also provide useful experience for other countries. I hope we will, in the spirit of respecting each other and seeking common ground while setting aside differences, build a dialogue platform and expand communication channels to jointly discuss concepts, ways, and policies for promoting children's development. I also hope Chinese and American scholars and research institutions will launch joint studies on frontier issues in early childhood development to deepen theoretical understanding, study, and practice in this area. It is also my hope that research institutions can play a bigger role in this area. For example, Mr. Liu Mai once visited the poorest areas of China, such as Yunnan, Guizhou, to do an experiment on child nutrition. And our plan to improve the nutrition of children in poor areas is also the result of the joint study of many scholars. And President Xi Jinping has personally pointed out that we should do a good job in this area. I hope more non-government organizations, research institutions, schools, and people from various sectors will take part in this endeavor to build strong synergy for improving children's development and deepening our people-to-people exchanges. Ladies and gentlemen, it was the determined efforts made by one generation of Americans after another to pursue their dreams that made today's innovative, dynamic, and modern America possible. The Chinese people also have their dream, which is to bring prosperity to our country, renewal to our nation, and happiness to our people. Children are the future and hope of a country's development. Promoting children's development is a key part in the Chinese dream, the American dream, and the world's dream. We sincerely look forward to making more progress through our cordial exchanges and close cooperation so that every child on both sides of the Pacific and children in the whole world will be healthier and happier. And the Chinese dream, American dream, and the world's dream will be more fascinating and beautiful. Thank you.
Well, I certainly agree that this issue deserves the high-level attention that we are giving to it today. And I am very grateful to the Vice Premier for her eloquent description of what China is doing and her deep understanding of the importance that all countries, all people, all families should place on the early childhood development of our boys and girls. It is a great pleasure for me to be once again with Madam Liu, who I've had the great pleasure of working with on many of these issues that may not be in the headlines, but are in the trend lines. You know, too often we only pay attention to what is on the front pages of the newspapers because those are the crises we have to deal with. But the work that she has described, that she is undertaking in her new responsibility as Vice Premier, looking after the health and well-being of the Chinese people, particularly Chinese children, will, I predict, in history be seen as among the most important commitments that China is making. I am delighted to be here with John Thornton, the chair of the board of Brookings. I'm also delighted to see so many distinguished Chinese friends and former colleagues here today. And I'm particularly pleased to see former Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard, who is working with Brookings. Madam Liu and I have had the opportunity to work closely together and in particular to launch the high-level people-to-people dialogue between our two countries in an effort to foster mutual understanding and respect. She is the highest-ranking woman in the Chinese government. First, she served as state counselor and now as vice premier over the last several years. And as someone who knows a little bit about how hard it can be to crack those glass ceilings, I applaud her personal prestigious responsibilities, but also her commitment to women and children, which is a shared interest that we both highly value. This cause of early childhood development is close to both our hearts. It is true we are both mothers, and maybe that gives us a particular perspective, but it's also because as leaders in our respective nations, we have seen how important it is to tend to our very youngest citizens, to ensure that every child has the best opportunity to succeed in school and in life. It is not only the right thing to do, it is the smart thing as well. investing in early childhood development is one of the best returns on investment that a country can make to accelerate long-term economic growth and productivity. As Secretary of State, I had the great privilege of visiting 112 countries, and I saw firsthand the choices and the investments that various countries were making. Certainly, there is no better investment than in our children. James Heckman, a Nobel Prize-winning economist at the University of Chicago, has pioneered research into the broad benefits to society and to economies from early childhood development. Every dollar we invest can yield savings of more than $7 down the road by improving school achievement and graduation rates and reducing social problems such as crime and unemployment. Advances in brain science are also telling us how important these first 5 years of life are for both individual and social development. Even something as simple as talking or reading or singing to your infant can have a huge impact on the brain development. Again, it is a wonderful way of interacting with and nurturing your child, but we now can see on brain scans it is actually building brain capacity. Scientists can watch brain synapses and neurons firing when children are being interacted with in a supportive and positive way from literally the minute they are born. When you are talking to an infant, you are teaching an infant. And you're feeding that child's brain to help it grow and to prepare it for the learning that lies ahead in schooling. So it is no surprise to hear that China, focused on sustaining growth and lifting people out of poverty, is investing even more in early childhood development, which includes early childhood nutrition, because you have to also feed the body while you feed the brain in order to produce healthy children to take on the challenges of the 21st century. Now, there are important discussions underway in the international scientific community about how we include these early childhood brain research findings in our understanding. And that has filtered out to decision makers, both in governments and in the not-for-profit sector, as well as the private sector, to do more to include early childhood development in new global development goals. We made great progress on the Millennium Development Goals starting in 2000. China has demonstrated great success, but now we will have a new set of goals coming out of the high-level panel review that Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called for. And early childhood should be, and I hope will be, up there with every other important goal to advance human development and alleviate poverty. Because what we have learned is that it's not enough just to put children into school at the age of 4 or 5 or 6. If they haven't been prepared, if they haven't been given the chance to learn before they ever walk in the school door, they will not realize their potential at the level that we would hope for them. So we are switching our focus just somewhat from what happens in the classroom, what the expectations are, the outcomes we seek, to understanding we have to better prepare children. I've been interested in this for quite some time because, as Madam Liu said, there was research done in the United States back in the 1970s that I wrote about in my book, It Takes a Village, that actually counted the words that children heard in their earliest years of life. It would not be a surprise that in families of education, there were more words, which created a cycle of greater opportunities and greater preparation among the children of those families. In middle-income, middle-class families, there were fewer words, but still many words. In poor families, far fewer words. And the estimates were shocking, that by the time children from each of those three economic and educational groups, which often correlate, certainly in our country, reached kindergarten, the children from the well-educated, upper-income families had heard 30 million more words than the children from the poor families. So is it any surprise that the vocabularies of the children from families like my husband's and mine were much greater, the understanding of the world around them much more sophisticated, and the ability to learn much greater? So what we are doing at the Clinton Foundation is focusing on those early years of life to try to encourage families in particular, but also child care workers, preschool teachers, community support systems to do more to help children from poorer backgrounds have greater interaction when it comes to brain development through the simplest, cheapest approach of all, helping families do more to interact with their own babies. I've done this work for a long time, as I said, and very often, 30 years or so ago, I would make it a practice when I saw families, particularly young mothers with their infants or babies or toddlers, and particularly with the infants and the babies, I would say, I bet you're having so much fun talking to your baby. And there would be a look of surprise. And the mother would say, well, why would I talk to her? She can't talk back. And I realized that somehow we had lost the accumulated wisdom. And also, given the stresses, the economic stresses, the social stresses that so many families around the world face today, that we had to do more to reach out and assist and empower families to be their children's first teachers and to understand the important role that they play. Because the results are so wonderful to see. And I want to end with a story from my experience with Madame Liu. When I was in Beijing in the spring of 2012 for the Strategic and Economic Dialogue, she and I held a meeting of our people-to-people dialogue in the beautiful National Museum. When our delegation arrived, we were met by a large group of Chinese and American children waving flags and offering greetings. Upstairs, a chorus of Chinese and American students sang two songs of welcome, one in English, the other in Mandarin Chinese. And then finally, two exchange students stepped forward. A very impressive young Chinese woman talked about living in New York, an eye-opening and horizon-expanding experience, and she did it in flawless English. Then an American young man stood up and just as impressively described his studies in China and how it had furthered and deepened his understanding of the relationship between our two countries. I was so proud of both of them, and I think from mother to mother, we looked at each other and thought, this is the future we want to see. And we want to see our young people working together, understanding each other, communicating. Yes, will there be differences? Of course, there are between two people, let alone two great countries. But to have the background and the confidence to work through those disagreements peacefully and effectively is our hope. And much of that depends upon the education and the start in life that children in both of our countries have. In my 4 years as secretary, I participated in countless formal meetings and carefully choreographed summits. But every so often, a human moment broke through and reminded us why we were all doing this in the first place. being away from our own families to try to help make the world a better place for everyone. That was one of those moments. And listening to those students just reminded me that it was so important what Madam Liu and I were trying to do to strengthen people-to-people ties, to do more on educational exchanges, cultural tours, scientific collaboration, and so much else. So I am delighted that Brookings will be working in this important area of early childhood development, because I think this is yet another way that we can see cooperation. We can see our researchers working together. We can see our early childhood experts and teachers working together. And we can build stronger ties starting from the very beginning of life that will send unmistakable signals to our people in both our countries and to the world that we intend to, as I've often said, cross the river together in the same boat, rowing in the same direction for a better world for us all. Thank you.
That was wonderful.
我现在主要的工作呢，是要确保我们的会议能够继续按照预先的日程进
行。I'm going to ask them at the same time so we can move this along. For Secretary Clinton, I'd like to ask the following question. This is going to sound almost naive in the current Washington, but nevertheless, given the overwhelming evidence about the benefits of what we've all been describing this morning,Why is it so difficult in our country to get consensus on the scale of public investment into early childhood development? And for Vice Premier Liu, if you could explain to the audience, given the fact that many, if not most, of the children we're talking about are in rural China or the children of migrant workers in urban China, why the investment in that particular group is so important for China's economic and social future. Secretary Clinton.
Well, let me start then, John. I think there is a consensus that we need to do more in early childhood development. There is a debate about the government's role at the federal level, the government's role at the state and local level, the family's role, the private sector's role, and the not-for-profit sector role. What I am hoping we can do is begin to pull all the various parties together. As Madam Liu said, President Obama called for a greater federal government investment in preschool, which is very important, something that helps to shore up systems where they exist around the country and create them where they don't. At the same time, a number of states, Oklahoma and Georgia being two of them, have made significant investments in early childhood education. So this is not a partisan issue. It's a values issue that has budgetary consequences. So what we are hoping for is to make a strong case that there is an opportunity for our federal government, our state and local governments to make a commitment to early childhood. The newly elected mayor of New York has made a very explicit commitment. So that's the government side of the equation. And it's incredibly important, and it needs to be continually expanded in the right ways. But it's not only about our government. Because what I was talking about are the very earliest weeks and months of life, where the first educational experience that a child has is in the family that is responsible for that child. And it's my very strong belief that even if we had everything we could dream of for institutional preschool programs around our country tomorrow, we would still be working to make sure that families, particularly families that don't have this information or been given the opportunity to understand what they can do as their child's first teacher would be doing more. So I think, John, that this has to be elevated as an issue, but it needs to be seen not just as a government issue or not just as a family issue, but as an integrated approach to helping our very youngest citizens get the best start in life and giving them the support and services through their families and through communities that they deserve to have. So it's an issue that, because of the brain science now, is catching on and being understood by a much broader population in our own government as well as society.
Thank you.
好，我也就是回答一下约翰桑顿先生啊。Okay,
I would like to answer the question raised by Mr. Thornton. China's early childhood development is accompanied by the pace of urbanization. China's urbanization rate is 52%. In the next decade, 1% of China's population will move to cities every year. That is to say, over 10 million farmers will move to the cities. And these has created the problems of children left behind in rural areas and children of migrants. After I return to China, I will participate in a meeting in urbanization of China. And this process of urbanization will be people-oriented, not only economically, but also in terms of social development. We need to provide guarantee for education, health, and medical services of these children. As for the question raised by Mr. Thornton, I think that will be a priority in our future work. In the next step, the Chinese government will follow the principle of putting children first and take the development of children in rural areas and children of migrants of our priority. We have adopted an outline for the development of Chinese children in the next 8 years, which makes the development and education of children left over in rural areas and children of migrant workers an important part. We have built over 40 million kindergartens and many boarding schools. If children are left behind in rural areas and taken care of by their grandparents, I don't think that's a good idea. So I believe we need to build such boarding schools and install these schools with good communication facilities such as telephones so they can communicate with their parents every day. And when they grow up, they can move to cities together with their parents. What we are now experiencing is part of this process of urbanization. We need to do our best to provide good care, health, and education for them so as to pave the way for their future success. In addition, we should also make differentiated policies for the early childhood development. China is experiencing an imbalance between urban and rural areas and among different regions. In rural areas, especially in those very poor rural areas, we have carried out nutrition intervention to remove the phenomenon of malnutrition. But in cities, we have seen some obese children because of overnutrition. So we need to offer different policies for these two different phenomena. A So health and education will be an important part of early childhood development in China, and I would like to stress, we hope that through the high-level consultation on people-to-people exchange with the United States and other countries, we can exchange cooperation and exchanges in this area. I know that the United States have paid attention to this problem from very early, so we can draw upon your good experience. China now has 260 million students and also 310 million children. We have made expenditure on education 17.6% of our fiscal budget expenditure, and this number is increasing by 19% every year. According to the decision adopted at the third plenum of the 18th CPC Central Committee, education is still a priority in China's future development. I hope and I believe through cooperation exchanges with the United States and other countries, these issues will be very well resolved.
I have to leave. Thank her again for coming to Brookings to discuss this important issue. And on behalf of the Clinton Foundation, we would look forward to partnering with you at Brookings, obviously partnering with our Chinese friends in our initiative called Too Small to Fail, because that is how we think of the challenge that we face. But again, please join me in thanking both Brookings and Madam Liu for this very informative session.